Hey listeners, I'm back. I know I was supposed to push out a session last week, but life as usual fusses with our schedules, and I had to do a little rearranging. But fear not, because Seats at the Table is back in full force. Today I'm speaking with Altera Hatton, a really inspiring and wonderful mediator. I don't think y'all know this about me, but I've been sporadically involved in mediation and peace education for the past 4 or 5 years, so I'm super excited to be sharing this conversation with you all. Altera has been involved in mediation for the past several years, and we talk a bit about how conflict resolution can help us in our daily lives and the obstacles she's faced as a mediator working with a visible disability. So, if you're ready to dive in, we'll get started.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh my God. What's up? Oh my God. Tell me. Oh my God. What is it? Oh my God.
Seats at the table.
Wow.
Hey, hi Altera, thanks so much for joining me. Can you introduce yourself for our audience? Who are you and what are some of the main things that you're working on now?
Hi, well, my name is Altera Hatton, as you know, and I am doing mediation with almost all of my time. So I am a mediator located in Monterey, California. And I've taken mediation training from Harvard and Klingendale, and in the U.S. there's a mediation group called AAA, which is the American Arbitration Association. Mm-hmm. And I usually work on multi-party mediations, so right now I'm doing two cases, a state case and a marriage dissolution settlement as well. And yeah, so that's kind of my life. I'm also doing some de-escalation trainings, so looking forward to
Wow.
Yeah, that's I love that, actually. I have to say that's kind of my wheelhouse.
So how did you get involved in mediation, and how did you make that become something that you could have a career out of?
That's a great question. I was intending to go to law school, actually.
Okay.
I have to admit that Burning Man comes into play.
Somehow Burning Man always makes its way around.
Yes. So my friends encouraged me to go to Burning Man for the first time.
Okay.
Ago, and I was planning to go to law school that fall. And I really had a change of heart, honestly, sitting out in the desert and just experiencing the community there. I really thought that what I wanted to do was to put my energy into something that wasn't kind of the standard legal system. I think our legal system is, you know, punitively based and doesn't have a long view, really. And I really wanted to put my energy into something that was going to create a better long view for communities and to create better restitution for people who experience trauma or conflict. I think conflict is something that we don't get trained how to handle in our lives. You know, you can learn how to balance a checkbook or drive a car, but nobody says, like, what kind of conflict style do you feel comfortable with?
Yeah, that's definitely true. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that until college. And I was just like, I don't know what that means. Like, so why do you think that's the case? Like, why do you think mediation and conflict resolution isn't taught at a young age? And why is it important for us to learn those things?
You know, I think it's a type of culture we live in. We in the U.S., we live in a predominantly white-based culture, and I'm using white to mean Northern European, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Most indigenous cultures focus on restorative justice models or mediation as sort of their baseline of how they do conflict resolution. So every child learns those skills. And in indigenous cultures in North America, you know, that's part of, ubiquitously, part of every tribe. And that sort of intergenerational training about how to handle conflict and how to restore community harmony is really a big focus. And we have a very mobile culture. And so really the focus on community harmony, as much as there is individual gain, and individual gain often comes through short-term dominance strategy. And so I think that our culture doesn't necessarily put the focus on the benefits of those models because we don't necessarily see the immediate tangible results individually.
That's definitely true. And I like how you mentioned indigenous cultures and that, and conflict resolution and mediation being something that's sort of built into the culture and built into the way that children are raised. But whenever I would talk about mediation or conflict resolution, like, those terms seem very Western, or very, like, you use the term when you're talking about in, like, Northern Europeans, white. So some people think it's sort of naive or too optimistic. So how do you get people to understand that it's something beyond being naive or beyond being like, kumbaya, let's like all work together and be happy and be fine?
That's the best question ever. Thank you so much. I could ask that. And, you know, I put it this way, and I think this kind of appeals to everyone. But, you know, when you're in a situation of conflict, be it like interpersonally or in an organization, the way that we handle those now is that we go before a judge and we have a judge make those decisions for us. And so you're basically then obligated to go with whatever the judge decides is best for you. And if you like having control over your life, then mediation is actually the choice you want to have.
Okay.
So mediation gives you the responsibility of coming up with something that you can live with. And basically the ball stays in your court. You're making a decision that is you know, reflective of your personal values and ideals. And you might not get everything you want out of the situation, but you're not relinquishing control to a stranger as well. So going back to that Western cultural model, that appeals to almost everyone here.
Yeah. And so since I kind of am familiar with mediation and I've took conflict resolution courses, but maybe some of our listeners aren't really aware of what mediation is. I know whenever I would type mediation, it autocorrects to meditation. I think meditation is great, but you know, they're two very different things. And so could you explain a little bit more about what mediation is in terms of like in your professional career, what do you do as a mediator and what does that look like?
That's great. That's absolutely hilarious because I think when I first sort of came out as a mediator, everyone said, oh, you're teaching meditation.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's really cool and interesting. But I mean, which it is interesting, but it's completely different than what you actually do.
I do live in California, so I can understand the confusion.
Yes, definitely.
So mediation is basically directed communication. The idea is that you have a neutral party that comes into a situation of conflict. So kind of the classic mediation I think a lot of people in the States are familiar with is divorce mediation. So when you're having a marriage and you have to decide like what assets are going where and you know, childcare responsibilities and things like that. That process can take a lot of time and effort between the parties involved. And so typically people will choose mediation over going to a judge because it gives them a chance to stay in control and also to give the time and effort necessary to kind of sort out all of those details that you really can't do in a court environment. So and that's kind of that type of understanding of mediation actually kind of applies across the board. Basically, time you need to have a directed communication, someone making sure that, you know, goals are met and everyone's needs are being expressed and addressed. You really have to have someone in a neutral position. It's really hard for two people to get there on their own. So,
yeah, definitely. And so do you think that maybe before explaining what mediation is to people, do you ever feel as though people judge you based off of you being a mediator and like think that maybe you are too optimistic of a person? And like, how do you deal with people's perceptions of what you are as a mediator?
That's really funny. So I work with a lot of judges and lawyers, and I feel like a lot of that mediators are like lawyer light.
Yeah.
And I think actually we end up doing more work than most lawyers.
Okay.
So I think
because it is a back and forth for sure.
Just to be a little competitive about it, you know.
Yeah.
It's fine to memorize laws. It's really different to put yourself in a position where you have to really step outside yourself and see what the needs and communication, both expressed and unexpressed, the people around you are. And so I think there's definitely a little bit of a cultural judgment. It's interesting because that doesn't exist in Europe. So when I work in
Yeah,
mediation has a lot more credibility and it's considered a lot more intensive, actually. So it kind of flips when I work in Europe.
Okay. Why do you think that is? I mean, because I mean, in the U.S., mediation is, I feel like it's becoming more popularized. A lot of community organizations are talking about mediation as a form, as an alternative to like the punitive criminal justice system that you were mentioning before. So why do you think that it's not really seen as like serious as a subject than in Europe?
I think it's time in. I think in Europe, there's mediation practices for hundreds of years. It's ingrained in a lot of European law. There's arbitration clauses in almost everything. And though arbitration and mediation are different, they have similarities. And for example, like the mediation that the International Criminal Court does is really well known by everyone, even outside of The Hague. It's just across Europe.
Okay.
People understand what that process is. So,
yeah.
And then, I mean, even things like if you look at the UN and the work they do there as well, a lot of people acting as mediators aren't actually trained specifically as mediators. They're diplomats. Mediation process is still an integral part of that system.
Yeah. You were mentioning the cases that you're working on currently. Are those things that you foresee yourself doing long term? I know we were going to get to this question later, but this is sort of my train of thought is jumping ahead a little bit.
No problem. I would really like to work more on international conflict, multi-state conflicts. So that's kind of where I'm aiming with my career. At the moment, I'm fairly new to mediation. I think I should be quite honest with that. I am less than 4 years in at this point. So.
Okay.
So I'm still a baby mediator. And I really like getting the experience that I'm getting just, you know, kind of by hours in the mediations I'm doing now. And I feel like mediation is one of those like observational skills. And so the more experience you have just in terms of like variation of people you meet and hours in, the better a mediator you are. So
yeah,
I don't want to take that jump too soon.
Yeah, I know that makes a lot of sense because mediation is really like trying to understand the parties that you're working with. Are there like any interesting or weird stories that you've had, like clients that you've had or sort of changes in perceptions that you had about clients based off of your work with them?
That's an interesting question. I'm surprised the level of emotional conflict that happens in business environments. That's actually, I think, the most often. Yeah. I kind of, as a young mediator, I was taught that, you know, the emotionally based mediations are always family mediations or somehow domestic engagements. And to be honest, all conflict is emotionally based. And so I've done a number of mediations for large organizations. And I really find that someone will often come to me and say, oh, we have this issue with employment law or something like that. And when I get down to it, it's really interpersonal and often about feeling that they need to be heard by the other person. So
That's definitely mediation 101. It's always about like what are the needs that the person is that's not being met, basically.
Yeah, take two Marshall Rosenbergs and call me in the morning.
Yeah. So I know we wanted to talk a little bit about your activism and then your identity as a person with a disability and how that impacts the way people perceive you as a mediator. How do you deal with those stigmas that are associated with having a disability?
I think that's really interesting. I definitely think that's part of the reason I went towards this type of career. I worked in a very corporate environment when I was younger, and I found that there's a lot of lack of information and socialization ability. So people often have pretty unrealistic ideas about what my limitations are, for example. And so I found fairly early on that I actually was happier as an employee and as a, well, not an employee, actually, as a contractor, someone who came in and worked for a brief period of time to kind of fix a problem and then leave. And it allowed me to sidestep a lot of those perceived social roles or limitations that would come up in other circumstances. So I really found that quite helpful. I also find, you know, it's an interesting identity card that everyone knows me as the mediator. So I don't blend into a crowd. I almost feel like I don't need a business card anymore.
Do you, because you said you were, when you were working as a contractor, you felt like it was better for you. Can you go a little bit more into that as to like why you thought that maybe you it would allow you to sidestep some of this socially perceived ideas about what a person with disabilities have?
Well, I think a lot of people with disabilities are significantly underemployed, both in the U.S. and internationally. And so, and there's often a perception that there is more support or you know, almost like a need, a lack of a need to work for people with disabilities. There's an idea that you can just, you know, live a life of ease. And that's really economically not true in this country. So most people with disabilities do need to work full time. You know, there isn't some sort of social safety net that keeps us supported somehow magically. So I have heard over and over the years from friends that said that, you know, there's a lot of kind of misperception about their economic role and their need to be a full-time employee, their ability to show up for work on time, their ability to be, you know, a competent and dependable employee. Often people with disabilities that I know had, you know, volunteered somewhere and then kind of proven themselves and then were hired on.
I see. Okay.
Overcome that perception. So
yeah.
About being a contractor is that you can't really argue with the person who shows up to fix something.
That's true. They're like, well, we have to listen to whatever you say, basically.
Pretty much. And that's a theater.
I see.
I start with sit down.
Yeah. And so when you were working in a corporate environment before you started mediation, was that sort of the experience that you had? Was that there was like just too – there was a lot of pressure as to what people believed you were capable of?
There was a lot of misconception about my abilities or an idea that for some reason I wouldn't want to be as corporately competitive as my
– I see.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Completely not true. I mean, competitive. So.
Yeah. So I think in terms, like for me, for example, I think a lot about how people perceive me and perceive the people around me based off of like what they, how they look. So just like physical characteristics based off of like race or gender. But I never really thought about disability as something, even though it's like, it should be like a duh, like that's something that I should be thinking about. But it's just not, even for people who are socially conscious, sort of not really within their purview. Like they don't really see it as an immediate factor whenever they're thinking about like diversity or thinking about how to represent other people. And so have you had experiences in your personal or your professional life where someone's perception of you really harmed your personal or professional life, depending on whatever you're comfortable talking about?
Gosh, that's such a good question. And I know you gave me the questions before this interview, but I actually thought of a specific for that one. Let me think about that for a second. I would say it's kind of an invisible harm. You know, I would hear about things that happened or didn't happen because of someone's perception of me, maybe after the fact. But I never had something that was really glaringly obvious. Oh, okay, actually, wait. yeah, I wonder if I should. Well, okay, yeah, I can think of one.
Yeah, we can always come back to this too. If something pops into your head, you can just be like, hey, I remember this thing.
Okay, yeah, let's come back to it. Let's come back.
Okay, so I just wanted to ask you a little bit also about how you believe your social identity has helped you in your work and in your professional career.
Yeah, so there's a lot of benefit to being incredibly hard to miss in a room. and I'm often the only person like me I see in my political and social and work environments. And so that's always interesting. And I think that's, to be shameless about it, I think that's something I use to my benefit all the time. I don't feel like I need a business card. I know that I have been the designated minority, which is you know, a bit of a hard pill to swallow, but but it also works in my advantage a lot. And I also remind people, you know, ask them about the diversity quotients and that kind of thing. So I definitely use that pretty shamelessly. So
okay, because I think that in the past several years, people have been more empowered in their identity, whether it's your race or your like your gender, those sorts of social identity categories. Do you think that that's happened for you as well? Like maybe in the past you were a little bit more self-conscious about your disability, or you questioned some of your abilities because other people questioned your abilities. Do you think that that still happens sometimes, or are you more like, this is who I am, you could take it or leave it sort of thing?
So I've been recently told that I probably was born radical.
You just came out of the womb like, oh, here I am.
Yeah, I probably came out fist first.
Oh, man.
I do think, as you know, in maturity, that we get more comfortable with ourselves and our abilities.
Okay.
So, despite the fact that I was always very aware that my personal identity and my personal understanding of my experience of life and capabilities didn't match the kind of average around me of what people thought I was capable of or how they thought I lived my life.
That
as we get older, we also just become more ourselves. And so I definitely have felt like that in the last couple of years, that I'm just like, oh, this is how I do things, you know. But I've also always been fairly radical about that. And I've always been willing to challenge directly or indirectly those perceptions. So.
And do you think working in mediation has helped you do that?
I don't think so. I actually think that those are separate processes. I think mediation helps me to be a bit kinder and more gentle of a person. I really put myself aside and what I want out of a situation aside when I'm a mediator. And so I really appreciate that. I almost feel like I feel a bit guilty. I feel like I should be, you know, maybe paying for the service myself, because it's gradually making me a much nicer person.
Yeah. I think mediation tends to do that, because I would notice, like, even in high school or even like in early college, I'd be like, gosh, this person's so annoying, and I would get so upset. But then after a while, it's just like, you know what? It's because their needs aren't being met, or because of this and this, and this is their perception of what's happening. And so it really has helped. But I also do think whenever you're like, it's you in your own situation, it becomes a lot harder to kind of disentangle your emotions from being unbiased and everything.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with all of that.
So in the past couple years, I've noticed that maybe because I'm more of an adult now, some of my friends will ask me for advice on like their own conflicts that they're having. And so I'm wondering if you, as a professional mediator, get requests from your friends or your family to help solve their issues. And so how do you sort of deal with that?
This is such a great question, because not only do I get requests from my friends and family, which honestly was going on before I worked as a mediator as well, but I get requests in the grocery store.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, it's so funny. I feel like when I say I'm a mediator, often the next thing is like, oh, I'm going through this terrible divorce, or oh.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I've been.
Maybe you do need business cards then. So then you can just be like, just call me, figure it out.
Well, and you know, I'm not a counselor, so I often make that decision.
Yeah. That's true.
That everyone needs a therapist. You know, like everyone needs a car mechanic. So I often say, you know, hey, this is maybe something you could help work on, like, you know, this issue with a therapist or a good friend or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a flash in their life. I come and go. I'm not someone who can remember it all the time. But I really appreciate that people open up to me. I'm flattered and honored.
Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. I can't believe they ask you about stuff in the grocery store, though. I would just be like, I'm just trying to get my apples. Like, sorry.
It happens at least once a week. I'm not joking.
Oh my goodness. Do you tell people that you're a mediator and that's how they find out? Or is there like, do they just figure out organically?
I think people often ask me what my profession is because of my disability.
I see.
They see my level of presentation and they just assume that I'm professional, which is accurate. And that surprises them to some extent. And they want to know in what area I'm a professional. So.
I see. Okay.
Which is interesting. So again, free business card. Yay.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your future plans and sort of like, what is your main goal for your mediation work? And like your kind of your career trajectory looking forward.
Thank you for asking. So I have what I call my 10-year plan, which
okay.
I really want to popularize mediation in the US. I think it's an untapped area. I meet a lot of people like yourself who studied mediation but didn't really find a way to put it into their career or their practice professionally. And
yeah.
I'd like to see a change in that. So I have some pretty lofty goals.
The loftier, the better.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely want to do more de-escalation trainings. I think those are fantastic.
Okay.
I'm hoping to find...
What is de-escalation training exactly? Just so we all have a sort of basic knowledge.
So de-escalation is a type of directed communication. It's more of a self-reflective directed communication. Basically, it's
okay.
When you're presented with a conflict, things that you can do to bring the conflict either down emotionally on your side or on the other party's side or kind of in general. So de-escalation would be things like active listening or ways to bring down a potentially violent conflict. So some action skills as well. Doing de-escalation training for a couple of years with school systems and also private organizations. And I'm going to start doing that with police groups as well. So,
wow.
Yeah. I think it's.
Yeah, good luck. That sounds so exciting.
Thank you. And then in mediation in general, I'm really hoping to find ways to just popularize it in terms of TV and media and do more myself in terms of like YouTube videos and things like that. Just kind of bring the idea of mediation more to the forefront. So.
Wow, that's all really great. And I'm so excited to see what happens in the future for you.
Thank you. This is a great interview. I'm really excited to have done this with you. Thanks.
Yay, thanks so much. Everybody, I'm going to be linking Altera's information in the SoundCloud information box. So check it out if you want to learn more about mediation and about all her work. Thanks, everybody. See you soon. Well, there you have it. Mediation will solve all of your problems. Well, okay, not really, but mediation is a great tool to handle conflict. My mentor, Dr. Paula Garb, always says that conflict in and of itself is not negative or bad, but how we deal with it can be. So, as Altera talked about, mediation addresses the emotions involved in any conflict, and it's a much more productive method of ensuring all parties are heard. For more information about Altera and her mediation adventures, you can check out her website at alterahatton.com. That's A-L-T-A-I-R-A-Hatton.com. Until next time, bye friends!